Rich Hoffman here. I'm the chairperson of the Amador County Chamber of Commerce, and with me on the line is Dr. Rita Kerr, who is the county health officer. Good morning, Dr. Kerr.
Good morning, Rich.
So we've taken some questions from some of our members, and I was hoping I would have a chance to ask you some of those. Before that, I just wanted to announce that the chamber has an exciting announcement in terms of a collaboration with the Amador County Emergency Operations Center, and we will be distributing PPE supplies, masks, and sanitizers in conjunction with them. So we're super excited about that.
Yes, I've been briefed on that as well, and that is an exciting partnership. It's all things to continue to make our county a healthier, safer place.
Absolutely. Okay, so if you don't mind, I'm just going to jump right to the list and we'll just burn through these.
Okay.
So the first question I have is, in terms of the length of time it takes to get results, the person asking the question says they've heard that some have been tested and did not get results, you know, until 13 days, which is about the time that it takes to incubate. At the max end. Is there a chance that this will be expedited at some point?
There is a chance it will be expedited, yes. Currently, there is a bottleneck in the testing process because of shortages at the laboratories that actually process the swabs that were collected. This is a problem not only in California, but throughout the country. There are portions of the equipment that the lab use that are disposable, things, they call them pipettes, to move some of the specimen from the test tube into the chamber of the equipment that runs the test, and there's a shortage of some of that equipment, as well as some of the chemicals that are called reagents that the laboratory uses to process the test. Our hopes for improvement in time, the FDA has now approved under emergency use authorization, or an EUA, starting to do something called pool testing, which has been used in the past, where a group of specimens are tested together, and if the entire batch tests negative, then that whole group is negative. If the batch tests positive, then they go back and they run each specimen separately. And so those processes are starting to be used, and that will help speed things up.
That's great. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So in terms of mask wearing, those of us who are visiting local businesses see, you know, a high percentage, especially of staff members wearing masks, but sometimes are disappointed at, you know, a nose poking out or somebody pulling their mask down over their chin. What are the guidelines for that, and how do businesses educate their staff, I guess, would be the question.
The guidance is that a mask or face covering should be worn over both the nose and mouth. Breath is exhaled through both. And the best way, I think, to educate people is reminders and, you know, pictures, signs, much like the ones that the chamber produced, can be helpful reminders to people about the correct way to wear masks.
So just to follow up on that, we had another question about the kind of belt and suspenders question. You're seeing more and more of these plastic face shields out in the community. Is that a substitute for a mask, or should someone couple that with a mask over their mouth and nose?
The face shield is really intended for someone who cannot, for some reason, wear a mask over the nose and mouth. And there's very few people really that have a absolute medical reason for that. The face shield does confer some protection. It's not as much as a mask because it's not as tight-fitting. But especially those that come down below the chin and wrap around the sides of the face do offer some protection. The face shield-mask combination is primarily used in a healthcare setting for the protection of the wearer, so that both respiratory and eye protection are happening at the same time.
Very good. Thank you very much. So here's a question. Is it true that the number of cases are counted by the number of tests? For example, if someone tests positive and is tested daily, each day it's counted as a case?
No, that is not the way it's counted. Each case is one person. A person counts only once as a positive case. So if a person gets retested for some reason, the second or subsequent test results are basically added to the same record of the episode, and each case counts only once, no matter how many times they may test positive. Early on, when follow-up testing was being done to try and clear people to go back to work, it was fairly common to see people tested more than once, and each of those tests would only count for one case, as it was all from the same person. At this point, the guidance is moved to using a time and symptom-based strategy to clear people, and follow-up testing is no longer the recommendation for clearing someone to return to work or release from isolation.
I see. All right. So here's one from a hairstylist in Jackson, and she says after being closed for 3 months due to the COVID situation and cases on the rise, it seems, daily, what, as an industry, can they look forward to in the near future? Their business location really doesn't have the capacity to move outside, so I guess she's just trying to get an idea of what the future might hold for her.
Well, if Amador County does get put onto the state monitoring list, the watch list as many call it, hair salons are one of the categories that would be required to move their operation outdoors, and if they can't do so, they would have to close.
Very good. All right. Is the health department going into businesses and enforcing things like social distancing, for instance, at a restaurant, in terms of table spaces?
The public health department does not have our own enforcement team. All of our staff are working either in case investigation contact tracing roles. We have people involved in maintaining our supplies of equipment that then get distributed out, and we still have all of our normal daily operations to maintain as well. We have been working in conjunction with our environmental health colleagues who already have a relationship with food service facilities, and they have been making visits to the restaurants and other places to educate and reinforce the guidance. The fact that restaurants moved outdoors as of the July 13th statewide health officer order makes social distancing easier, because those tables can be spread out further outdoors where there's room to do that. And outdoors, because of air currents and circulation, is a safer place to be than indoors.
So for people, you know, if people are worried or concerned about how moving, ratcheting back or dialing the rheostat back on the phase would affect their business, what would you recommend? I mean, should people think, if we get on the watch list, should people think about operating their business as if we were back in phase two?
The change is to really move things outdoors as much as possible, which is a bit different than the phase two guidance was. Because the phase two guidance was reopening gradually with limited capacity indoors. There are certain aspects of this that remain the same, which are the need for social distancing, the use of face coverings, the increased hygiene and sanitizing procedures, but primarily the change between the stage two or phase two and what comes with the July 13th order is moving these businesses outdoors.
I see. So I sit on a number of boards, as some people listening with this chamber broadcast do, and we've all been utilizing Zoom for our meetings and have gotten accustomed to that, but it doesn't really replace, you know, face-to-face meetings. So we have a question. Can entities such as the board of directors of Preston Castle Foundation return to in-person meetings? They've met by conferences since March, or Zoom conferences. The board would follow a model of the Board of Supervisors, meet in a socially distanced manner, at least 6 feet of separation, outside, while requesting that all wear face coverings, hand washing stations and sanitizers would be available. And the meeting normally consists of about 13 people with, you know, a handful perhaps in the audience. Would that be something that they could move forward with?
At this point, that type of meeting, which is considered a gathering of a, is not allowed under the state's health officer's order. The difference between that sort of foundation board versus an elected, a board of elected officials like the Board of Supervisors is that the government meetings are required to allow for public comment and access, and they have, you know, very specific requirements to notice the meetings and circulate agendas and hold their meetings in a very prescribed way. In general, telephonic or virtual meetings really do need to continue to be the rule of the day because it is just a much safer method of getting the necessary business done without increasing the risk of exposing others, so should someone in that group be infectious and maybe not even know it yet.
And there are different guidelines that cover different types of public meetings. I know the Brown Act covers, you know, the supervisors and some of these county meetings. The Fair Board, as an example, is covered by Bagley-Keene, which the state government has relaxed some of those guidelines. So as long as we're making available to the public access to the meeting via Zoom or phone-in, we're following those guidelines. So I think, you know, there's always a way to get the public involved.
Yes.
And provide the transparency.
The Bagley-Keene Act also applies to some of the coalitions of state, you know, of the health officers throughout the state, and all of our meetings have gone to a virtual format since March as well.
Right, right. So why aren't gas stations and banks required to have sanitizers is the next question, with the comment gas pumps and pin pads are gross.
The guidance for any business that's open applies, and this is true even for those businesses that stayed open during the initial shelter-in-place or stay-at-home order. So the need for distancing and sanitizing applies to gas stations and banks. The gas station that I frequent does offer wipes. You have to walk over to the front of the in front of the mini mart in order to get them, but in general, I agree that the gas station pumps are just an area that's the one place I routinely use gloves is to handle the gas pump, and then I take those gloves off and I actually sanitize my hands as soon as I get in my car. I have a little pump of hand sanitizer right in my door in the cup holder.
Very good. Yeah, great advice there. So we have a question. Why are gyms and nail salons even open at this point?
Those were allowed to reopen during the early stage three portion of the reopening roadmap by the state. And because our county has an attestation to a variance, we have been allowed to, those businesses have been allowed to reopen. That being said, those are two categories that if we go on the monitoring watch list, they will need to move exclusively to outdoor operations or not operate if they can't be outdoors.
Are there categories that people haven't considered if we move on the watch list that will be in jeopardy?
I'll go ahead and read to you the list that is published on the state's website. This is pursuant to the state health officer's order of July 13th that any county who has been on the monitoring list for three consecutive days will be required to shut down the following industries or activities unless they can be modified to operate outside or by pickup: gyms and fitness centers, places of worship and cultural ceremonies like weddings and funerals, and the ceremony is the only part of the wedding that can take place. There are no receptions or parties or other types of gathering allowed for a wedding, and those have not been allowed since this shelter-in-place order went into place. The next category would be offices for non-critical infrastructure sectors, personal care services like nail salons and body waxing, hair salons and barbershops, and shopping malls that are indoor malls, so retail stores that have an entrance and exit to directly to the outdoors can continue to operate. I don't believe we have any of the large indoor malls in Amador County. This also notes that shops that offer tattoos, piercings, and electrolysis may not be operated outdoors because of health and safety considerations, and those must close if we go on the watch list.
Wow. All right. So just a simple question. How is COVID-19 different from the flu or SARS or other viruses?
I like how you preface that by saying it's a simple question. there's a lot of very scientific information I could share about this, but I will try and keep it relatively simple. First of all, the H1N1 is an influenza virus, which is a different type of virus. The first SARS and now the COVID-19, which is caused by what's called SARS-CoV-2, are both in the coronavirus family. All of them do cause respiratory illness as their primary type of problem, but they do differ in some important ways. The SARS virus that was circulating back in 2003-2004 caused a more severe illness than in general throughout the population than the current COVID-19. It has a higher rate of hospitalization and ICU risk, but the key thing is it was not as easily transmitted from person to person. And so there actually has not been a documented case of SARS, the original SARS, since 2004, because the strict public health measures that were implemented were able to contain the spread. COVID-19 is more challenging to contain because the virus that causes this disease spreads more easily, often causes mild symptoms, and also has a longer incubation period, as well as being contagious earlier in the disease course, even before the person realizes that they're ill.
Wow. So if I'm at home and I have a family member that lives in my household who test positive for the COVID-19 virus, and I take all the precautions to care for this person, and they remain in my home, is it inevitable that I'm going to get COVID-19?
It is not inevitable, and we have firsthand accounts from folks in our county who were the only person in their household that got infected because they were able to keep their distance from their loved ones. Oftentimes, they either had a separate bedroom, first of all, or someone slept on the couch instead of in the usual bedroom. When possible, we advise they have their own bathroom to use, and if that's not possible, we recommend that the bathroom be wiped down and sanitized after each use. In some instances, you know, some people have a two-story house. One person primarily stays in the upstairs and the rest of the family in the downstairs. They would socially distance if they had to be in the same room, and everyone would wear face coverings whenever they were within the same room as the others. And we also recommend that the sick person not be doing the cooking for the family.
Very good. So, Dr. Kerr, what's your view on antibodies and the antibody test? A, are the tests available here in Amador County? And B, if I do get a test and it shows that I have the antibody, is that protective in any way, or does that provide any protection for people around me?
First, yes, the antibody tests are available by doctor's order, or for those that want to go donate blood, Vitalant is doing screening of blood donors for antibodies for the purpose of finding possible plasma donors. And that would be done at no cost to the blood donor. The reliable antibody tests are done in a high-complexity lab setting, which would include somewhere like Quest or BioReference or LabCorp or through a hospital or university lab. The point-of-care tests, the ones where they just do a finger prick at the doctor's office, are considered a screening test, and if somebody shows a positive on that, they would actually have to have a blood draw test to verify the results. At this point, we have seen about 300 reports of antibody tests come back on county residents, and very few, less than 10. The last count I had, I think, was 4, and I still have some reports to go through on those, but we have not had a high return rate of positive antibodies in county residents to this point. As far as how much protection the antibodies give, that is something that is still under scientific study. At this point, the guidance is that someone who was a known confirmed positive case by nasal swab test, the estimate is at least 3 months of relative immunity or protection from being reinfected. And as we get more experience, that may be lengthened. But there is very little scientific data about people who never had a confirmed nasal swab have antibodies on a serology or blood test and how much immunity that is going to provide for them.
Got it. All right. Thank you. So my business has been closed down. I want to reopen or suddenly we're on the watch list and things have changed and the guidelines have changed. Where do I go to find out what I need to do to operate my business under the proper guidelines? Do I go to the health department? Do I go to the state COVID website? How do I put a plan together?
Thank you. That's a great question. The amador.gov.org site, there's a red banner at the top. That's the COVID-19 banner. If a business clicks through on the Roadmap to Reopening resources, we are doing our best to keep those links to guidance current and link to the state website. So if someone wanted to go straight to the state website, that's covid19.ca.gov, and scroll down to the industry guidance tab, that's where you can find them. There's a menu and you can click on the industry or sector that you're interested in and pull up the most current guidance. If you go to the county map page, that for the additional businesses that are allowed to be open in a modified way in counties like Amador that have a variance, that's where those additional sector guidance documents are found.
So I put my plan together. I'm following the guidance to the letter. Do I need to take that a step further and get any written approval from the health office?
A written approval is not required. And one of the reasons for that is because this changes so regularly, it is, again, we don't have an enforcement department here in public health. We are relying primarily on the businesses to, you know, keep, we put out notices when there's changes, but we're relying on the businesses to incorporate those changes, and then we respond to notifications that there may be a business that doesn't understand or hasn't implemented the changes, and then we go out and do an education effort.
So the onus is on the business to keep posted on what the latest guidelines are.
It really is, and we absolutely value the chamber being a part of this, because I know that's one of the things that the chamber is very concerned with, is making sure that Amador County is staying healthy and safe as possible. So as much as the chamber is able to, for your members, make sure that people keep on top of the evolution of the guidance, the better off we are.
Right, right. And so what's the preferred mechanism for reporting If I'm an individual, I go into a business and they don't appear to be following the proper guidelines, how do I report that?
There's a couple ways to do that. One is I always encourage people to take that opportunity, if they're comfortable doing so, to say, may I please speak with the manager and see if you can make a change real time by saying, you know, I've noticed that, you know, something here doesn't look right. Were you aware that this is going on and please, you know, address it? To me, the pressure of the customers within a business goes a long way for business owners to know that their clientele is taking this seriously and wants them to take it seriously. To actually officially report, you may either call the health department, our 223-6407 number. The environmental health department is happy to field issues on restaurants and eating establishments. As I said, they have previously established relationships with those facilities. Email to publichealth@amadorgov.org. Or for those businesses that are licensed by the state, like cosmetology and barbering, it is also possible to go online and file a complaint directly with that licensing agency.
Very good. Well, I have one last question, and it's related to, and you may not be able to answer it, it's not really a medical question, but related to a landlord's responsibility. So I have a business, but I rent the building from someone, and the conditions require me to make changes to my business model to continue to operate. Is there any responsibility that the landlord has to help or participate with those changes?
That is outside of my area of expertise. I would say that within the cities, probably speaking with the building department, and actually at the county, the same thing. If you're in an unincorporated area, speaking with the building or code department would probably be the best place to start looking for that information. I am not familiar with what requirements would be between a landlord and a tenant.
Yeah, sorry to throw you that one. It was just on my list. One more question then, and here's a medical question. So outdoor dining is great, and it's a great time of year for that, albeit it can be a little warm. Do misters present a problem in terms of the spread of the virus if you're in an outdoor environment?
No, I would not. Misters would not increase the spread of COVID. However, I will say, and I think you're right, it's absolutely a great time of year to be eating outdoors, and especially in the evenings when it cools down. As far as misters go, the most important thing really is that the water supply lines need to be maintained well to prevent other waterborne illnesses. Bacteria that can grow in stagnant water could spread through a mister, but not the COVID-19.
Very good. Great advice. Dr. Kerr, I can't tell you how much we appreciate your joining us for this discussion. Our members appreciate you and the work that you're doing in the county, and you know, we're very thankful to have you here.
You're very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, get our consistent message to our community. This really takes all of us working together to slow the spread of COVID, and I really appreciate the work of the chamber on the signage and continuing to get the message to your member businesses and to our community at large. Thank you.
Thank you.